28. Weigert recovered much more rapidly from surgery than most people of 76, which Caro ascribed to not only a strong constitution, but also to an even stronger desire for his session in another branch of the universe. Although glad of George's progress, Caro's promise to implant Watkins next weighed on her, as did Kayla. Jasmine again talked privately to Caro.
Doctor, something you should know. Kayla destroyed all my cosmetics this morning, smashed the lipstick, squeezed out the foundation, sprayed all my hairspray on a flower bed until the can was empty.
I'm sorry, Caro said, her belly turning sour.
I'll pay for them.
Thank you, but that's not the point.
Has she been destructive like that before?
No, never. It was everything.
The therapist is coming this afternoon to start work with her.
Right now, she isn't fit to go to school.
No. Please tell the therapist not to leave until I talk to her. She met with the therapist, who had nothing useful to say.
I just met her, doctor. Give us a little time.
Caro signed out a Jeep and took Kayla for a drive to see the ocean from Cayman Brac's famous bluffs. Startlingly blue, the water broke into white caps on the rocks below and flew upward, crystalline in the sunlight. Caro had waited for the expansion of heart that open water, with its suggestion of limitless possibilities, always gave her. It did not come. Kayla was unimpressed.
Pretty, she said listlessly, followed by, when is mom coming?
Soon, Caro promised.
Really soon.
Kayla folded her arms and said nothing during the drive back to the compound. Caro was touched by how hard everyone tried to draw Kayla from her sullen grief. Molly and Barbara offered to take her to the beach, or shopping, or to the resort hotel for lunch. Trevor brought out a deck of cards, did a few simple tricks. He told Caro he'd use them to amuse and distract his little patients in Africa, and offered to teach them to Kayla. Even Julian, not quite able to hide his lack of interest in children, offered Kayla a new video game. She responded to nothing, not even an extravagant gesture made by James. Caro entered Kayla's room to find the little girl, still in pajamas, sitting on the bed, facing a beleaguered Jasmine and a bewildered James. All three of them stared at the floor, where a mewling kitten sat in a towel-lined cardboard box. The kitten, black with a white-tipped tail, had the wide eyes of all kittens and a paw raised to one edge of the box. Kayla looked up, her bottom lip stuck out.
I don't want it! I told them I don't want it. Take it away.
Jasmine said,
You once told your aunt that you did want a kitten. She told me.
That was before, Kayla said. Take it away.
James turned to Caro.
I have a friend at Spot Bay whose cat had kittens. He's desperate to give them to good homes. We're not supposed to have pets in the compound, but in this case, I thought.
It's not your fault, Jasmine said. You were only trying to help.
Kayla moved her foot as if to kick the box. Maybe she was just going to nudge it, but Caro was strung taut. From frustration, from yearning, she said in a quiet, deadly tone she'd never used with Kayla.
Don't you dare.
Kayla, startled but not cowed, demanded,
When is my mother coming here?
When she's ready and I say so.
Kayla's face reddened, reminding Caro, uncomfortably, of Watkins. Kayla burst out with,
I hate you!
I'm sorry to hear that, Caro said in the same tone.
Because I love you.
Now get dressed and start your schoolwork. I'm coming back to check on you in 1 hour. James, will you please return the kitten to your friend?
Yes, James said quickly. Yes, I will.
Good. I'll see you later, Kayla. No answer. But as Caro followed James and the still mewling kitten, she caught Jasmine's glance of respect. And Kayla obeyed, going to her dresser and pulling jeans out of a drawer. So why did Caro feel even worse than before? Trevor chose a smaller, more intimate restaurant for their dinner together.
This time, she asked him to talk about Africa. He said,
"It's not exactly light conversation for a second date.
Will you tell me anyway?"
She gave him his own words from their cliff drive back to him.
"I want to know you in ways that actually count." His brown eyes held hers.
"Well, Africa certainly counts," he said, "if you're sure you want to know."
He told her about the children blinded by schistosomiasis, whom he could not help to see again. The soldiers, some as young as 10, with limbs mangled and torn by bullets, in the latest of Congo's never-ending wars. Renal failures, for which he had no dialysis machines. Wounds, for which he could not devise sterile dressings. Drugs he had to apportion, deciding who lived and who would have to die. Caro, a doctor, knew that all this happened. She even knew it must have happened to Trevor. But his vivid, personal images brought it, and him, into almost unbearable focus. He was so open with her, so trusting. How did people do that?
"Trevor, did you always want to be a doctor?"
"No. In my college years, I wanted to be a monk."
"A monk?"
"Yes, what I told you once before. I wanted a framework to understand the world, both the seen and unseen parts. Religion seemed to satisfy that. For a while, anyway."
"And you couldn't just become an ordinary Catholic? You had to try for monkhood?"
"I'm afraid I find it hard to do anything by halves."
He looked at her as he said this, and the entire conversation abruptly shifted into something else. She said slowly,
"I can't. It's hard for me to. I haven't dated anybody for a long time. Years."
"Years? And you, so beautiful, sitting there with soup on your chin?"
"Oh, God, why didn't you tell me earlier?"
She swiped with her napkin at her chin. He smiled.
"Didn't want to.
And, Caro, I know you're dealing with a lot just now. Is there anything else I can do to help?"
"No. I visit Ellen tomorrow, then I'll know more. I want to.
Another question, Trevor. This time about the compound.
Do you ever get the feeling that there are things about the project that we haven't been told?
I mean, I don't know what I mean."
"I do," Trevor said.
"I've noticed it too.
Certain glances among Julian, Aiden, and Watkins. Although not George. I don't know what they mean."
"Would you tell me if you did? If they'd told you something they hadn't told me?"
"Yes, I would."
They left the restaurant only when it closed. In the Jeep, Trevor kissed her deeply. Without discussing it, they left the Jeep parked and walked to the beach. Many people strolled the dunes and water's edge, and Caro didn't know if she was glad or sorry that she and Trevor weren't alone. She took off her sandals and let wet sand squish up between her toes and warm water swirl around her ankles. She and Trevor stopped talking. They held hands as they walked, and Caro felt his strong, long fingers warm around hers, felt the salty ocean breeze on her face, felt a return of something so long gone from her life that it took her a moment to give it a name. Happiness. Maybe temporary, but nonetheless, real. Weigert's multiverse session stunned her. He lay on the cot in Wing 3, wired from the new titanium case on top of his head to the computers. Julian and Barbara stood at their screens. Watkins sat in his wheelchair with Camilla beside him. Weigert said,
"I'm glad you're here, Caroline. Julian, I'm ready."
The old man folded his hands across his chest, suddenly reminding Caro of Ethan in his coffin. "Stop it," she told herself. Although Weigert looked nothing like a corpse, he smiled wide enough to show an ancient gold-capped tooth in the back of his mouth, his expression as expectant as a child on Christmas morning, right up until the moment his face went slack and the computer screens brightened. The same room. Weigert rose eagerly and rushed to the door. When he opened it and walked through,
It was not to the courtyard that Julian, Lorraine, and Ivan had altered in their hallucinations, but to a room that Caro had never seen. Old-fashioned furniture, some of which looked like genuine antiques. Books lining one wall. A leather chair was drawn up to the fire burning in the grate. Pictures and ornaments on the mantelpiece, daisies in a cut glass vase on a side table, heavy curtains drawn over the windows. A full-length portrait of a man in a powdered wig dominated one wall. In a basket by the fire, a brown and white dog lay asleep. A woman rose from a wing chair by the fire, white-haired and straight as a birch, her face welcoming. She spoke, but of course, the deep image reconstruction didn't include sound. Weigert rushed over and took her in his arms. She kissed him, then drew back slightly to look at his face, her expression almost maternal. Caro didn't need sound to imagine her words. "What is it, George?" They stood there talking, Weigert holding her tight until the session ended. He sat up, real tears on his wrinkled cheeks. "Now she's still alive somewhere. Still alive. In that reality. The reality I created for her." Forgetting the wires, he tried to stand. Julian raced over and freed him. Weigert walked out the door, leaving the other four people staring at each other. Julian started after him, but Caro said, "No. Give him a minute." And Julian stopped. Barbara said, "Did you notice the sharp detail? I hadn't realized that the other recordings were slightly blurry until I saw this one." Julian said, "He knows that room completely. When we were programming his chip, George described in incredible detail the reality he wanted to create. Also, there were two people in that multiverse. The greater the number of observers, the more probability waves are localized, and the less a given reality can deviate from consensus. So, to us, it looks sharper." Caro followed Weigert to check him for post-session physical complications. She could tell that Weigert wanted to be alone, but was too polite to say so. So she ran her neuro tests quickly and went to her own room. Weigert's hallucination had made him happy. A physicist devoted to data, he nonetheless completely believed that his wife was, in some branch of the multiverse, now alive, along with an entire world around her. She would leave that cozy living room to go to the supermarket, or visit friends, or walk that dog. And when she did, she would encounter more people that were part of her expected reality, and their additional observations, plus even the dogs, would extend and harden that consensual reality more. Or so Weigert believed. Did he believe a hallucination or an actuality of physics that her mind rejected because it was so revolutionary? Caro was no longer sure. Her only certainty was that Weigert's session had brought him inestimable comfort. He was revitalized through seeing, or thinking he saw, what Julian had once called his beloved dead. Revitalization was what Ellen needed. Caro sat on the edge of her bed, thinking hard for a long time.